This party official and an old acquaintance greeted him at the airport. They married 3 months later. Fuchs was feted by the GDR, awarded the Patriotic Order of Merit, the Order of Karl Marx, and the National Prize. Fuchs missed living in the West, but never expressed any regret. He died in 1988. The East German spymaster, Markus Wolf, wrote that Fuchs had made the single greatest contribution to Moscow's ability to build an atom bomb and change the world's balance of power by breaking America's nuclear monopoly. Harry Gold, Fuchs's KGB handler in the US, was sentenced to 30 years in prison. He was released after serving half his sentence and spent the rest of his life working as a clinical chemist in the pathology department of John F. Kennedy Hospital in Philadelphia. Jim Skardon went on not to catch a succession of spies. He was perplexed that he had never been given any sort of promotion to senior officer before his retirement in 1961. 2 years later, Kim Philby escaped to Moscow and later wrote a memoir mocking Skardon's scrupulously courteous interrogation methods, by which he meant entirely ineffectual. Millicent Baggett remained a pillar of MI5, unsettling her male colleagues by the force of her personality and the depth of her knowledge about communist subversion. She wrote a detailed account of the Comintern's international machinations and was one of the first officers to raise doubts about Philby's loyalty. Long after Baggett's retirement in 1967, MI5 continued to seek her help in rooting out communist spies. She never missed a choir rehearsal and died in 2006. Roger Hollis became Director General of MI5 in 1956 and remained in that post until his retirement in 1965. The investigation into whether he had been a GRU mole was ongoing at the time of his death in 1973, and the theory that he was a traitor rumbles on, refusing to die. One good reason to doubt it is Vladimir Putin. Russia's president, a former KGB colonel, is proud of his country's espionage history. If Hollis had been a top-level Soviet spy from 1932 until 1965, the GRU files would contain a mass of evidence. None has ever come to light, even though authorized Russian historians have, from time to time, been granted access to those archives. Proof that Russia ran a British traitor inside MI5 who was never caught would be a publicity coup of immense value to Moscow. This, then, is the main objection to the theory that Hollis protected Ursula. If the head of MI5 had been a Soviet supermole, Putin would be unable to resist boasting about it. 3 months after Ursula left Britain, Agnes Smedley died in Oxford after surgery for an ulcer. The Danish writer Karin Michaelis described her as a lonely bird of tremendous wingspread, a bird that will never build a nest, who renounced everything, fame, personal happiness, comfort, safety, for one thing, complete dedication to a great cause. Her ashes were buried at the Babaoshan Revolutionary Cemetery in Peking in 1951. The full extent of Smedley's espionage was not revealed until 2005. The body of Richard Sorge was exhumed after the war by his Japanese lover, Hanako Ishii, cremated and reinterred in Tokyo's Tama Cemetery. He was finally acknowledged by Moscow in 1964, declared a hero of the Soviet Union, and elevated to cult status by KGB propagandists. In 2016, a Moscow railway station was named after him. Chen Han Sheng, Sorge's closest Chinese collaborator, is regarded as a pioneer of social science in China. His research underpinned Maoist theories on the strength of the peasant masses, but he fell foul of the communist regime and was accused of being a nationalist spy. Denied medical treatment for glaucoma during the Cultural Revolution, he lost his sight. Chen died in 2004 at the age of 107. The novelist Ding Ling Ursula's friend in Shanghai, wrote some 300 books and suffered the full gamut of persecution under Chinese communism. Mao's initial approval, then condemnation for criticizing the party's male chauvinism, enforced public self-confession, censorship, imprisonment for 5 years during the Cultural Revolution, forced labor for 12 more, and finally rehabilitation in 1978. Patrick T. Givens, the cheerful Shanghai spy hunter, left the municipal police in 1936 and retired to the 300-year-old Bansha Castle in Tipperary. Hadshi Mamsurov, Ursula's boss at the GRU, survived the purges, the lethal infighting inside Soviet intelligence, and the war. He formed the Spetsnaz Special Forces, liberated two concentration camps, and retired to his native Ossetia with the rank of general. The intrepid American journalist Emily Hahn continued to write for The New Yorker well into her 80s. Alexander Foote published his memoirs, Handbook for Spies, disguising Ursula as Maria Schultz. MI5 collaborated on the publication, regarding the book as a successful exercise in anti-Soviet propaganda. A baseless theory has since emerged that Foote was a double agent, working for MI6 all along. He was given a job in the Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries and became a friend of the writer and broadcaster Malcolm Muggeridge. In a rare moment of understatement, Foote described his clerical work as very tedious compared to life as a spy. He died in 1956. Sandor Rado was released from a Soviet prison in November 1954 after the death of Stalin and returned to Hungary. 2 years later, he was officially rehabilitated and appointed head of the Hungarian Cartographic Service, and then professor of cartography at Budapest's University of Economic Sciences. In 1958, Melita Norwood was secretly awarded the Soviet Red Banner of Labour, the civilian counterpart to Ursula's military medal. She was identified by MI5 as a security risk in 1965, but not publicly exposed until 1999. When the KGB archivist, Vasily Mitrokhin, defected with 6 trunkloads of files. These described Agent Hola as a committed, reliable, and disciplined agent who handed over a very large number of documents of a scientific and technical nature. When the story broke, she was photographed by the press outside her suburban home, laden with shopping, and thus memorably dubbed the spy who came in from the co-op. At 87, she was too elderly to face prosecution. Soon after her exposure, Norwood received a signed copy of Ursula's autobiography, with a handwritten message from her former handler. To Letty, Sonia salutes you. Joe Gould resumed his career in the film industry after the war, becoming advertising manager for United Artists Corporation and then Paramount, where he organized publicity for the Hitchcock film Psycho. His last job was as Director of Public Affairs for the Center for Defense Information in Washington, D.C. In 2009, he was posthumously awarded the Bronze Star for his wartime work. The survivors of the Toul missions settled in East Germany after the war. Erich Henschke became editor of the Berliner Zeitung, then a Berlin city councillor, and finally a correspondent for East German state television. Paul Lindner was made editor-in-chief of Radio Berlin International. Tony Ruh was appointed director of customs for the GDR and then East Germany's ambassador to Romania, where he killed himself for reasons unknown in 1964. Lindner died of natural causes 5 years later. The Hammer spies were each awarded the Silver Star at a ceremony in 2006 and commended for gallantry in keeping with the highest traditions of the military service. Lindner and Ruh were the first German nationals and the only Soviet spies to receive American medals for wartime bravery. In October 1950, Olga Moot turned up at the British Embassy in West Berlin and offered to spill the beans on Ursula Burton. The former nanny told MI6 that she had worked for the Kaczynskis since 1911. Ursula started to use the greeting Heil Moscow when she was about 20 years old, said Ollo, as she launched into a rehearsed denunciation. Moot went on to describe Ursula's espionage in Poland, Danzig and Switzerland, her radio equipment and the secret meetings in the molehill. She related how her employer had told her to turn a blind eye to these activities and to forget all that went on. Triumphantly, Ollo reached her summation. Ursula was nothing more or less than a Russian spy. None of this was news to MI6. And anyway, Ursula was out of reach in East Berlin. British intelligence suspected Ollo's sudden appearance was a plot orchestrated by Mrs. Burton herself. The possibility cannot be excluded that Ursula has sent her to us to discover our present interest in the family. Olga Moot was politely ushered out of the building. Once again, British officialdom had declined to hear Ollo's condemnation. The first time in Switzerland, because she was incomprehensible, and the second, because it was suspected she might be Ursula's spy. The four younger Kaczynski sisters, Brigitte, Barbara, Sabine and Renata, remained in Britain, at first monitored closely by MI5, then tolerated, and finally forgotten by the security service. Jürgen Kaczynski renounced British citizenship and settled permanently in East Germany. Appointed a professor at Humboldt University, he founded the Institute for Economic History, sat in the East German Parliament, and ran the Society for the Study of Soviet Culture, instructing its members, "He who hates and despises human progress as it is manifested in the Soviet Union is himself odious and contemptible." He was an unreconstructed Stalinist who criticised Stalinism in his 1973 memoirs and earned a rebuke from the party. He described himself as a true party-line dissident. Jürgen was regarded as a loose cannon by party officials and was even briefly suspected of being an imperialist agent, yet he prospered in the new communist state. In 1971, he was appointed advisor on external economic affairs to Erich Honecker, the GDR's hardline leader. And he continued to write, compulsively, more than 4,000 works in all, including his monumental 40-volume History of Labour Conditions. He estimated his own output at roughly 100 books, proving that his numeracy was no match for his literacy. The vast Kaczynski Library, 70,000 volumes collected by three generations, now occupies 100 metres of shelving in the Berlin Central Library. Jürgen died in 1997 at the age of 92. Jürgen and Ursula bickered, competed, resented and adored each other until the end of their days. After a particularly explosive row, the cause of which is lost to history, he wrote, "Do you really feel that you can seriously jeopardize our relationship? You suggest that I would desert you in a world in which so much dirt is being thrown, or that I could change my relationship to you, something that forms a firm basis in my life? On this matter, you won't be able to change things, because the past has too strong a pull." We hope you have enjoyed this Penguin audio production of Agent Sonia, written and read by Ben McIntyre. It was produced by Red Apple Audiobooks. For more Penguin audio productions, visit us at penguin.co.uk/audio. Copyright in recording, Penguin Audio 2020. Text copyright, Ben McIntyre 2020. All rights reserved. The moral rights of the author have been asserted. Thanks for listening. Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.